and put those searchlights up on the tower right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight. Today we're putting the spotlight on two local community members, one being the marsupial, the koala, and another one, John Lemon. Welcome, John.
G'day. Nice to be here.
So, John, you've been here for about 10 years in Armidale?
Oh, yes, I have. Actually loving it. Gunnedah was a bit hot. You can always dress for the cold, but you can't dress for the heat.
So Gunnedah, came up in Gunnedah 2015?
Yeah, about 2015. My wife still teaches at O'Connor, and she came up a year earlier, and it's been very enjoyable to spend this part of our latter years in Armidale, loving it.
So your wife's a teacher, children?
Yes, we have two daughters and five grandchildren between Orange and Gunnedah, so we get to see them as often as we can, but work intervenes occasionally.
What do you do in Armidale?
Look, I work for myself. I'm sort of an environmental consultant for about 10 years, but yeah, prior to that, I worked for different government agencies, you know, a range of research projects and managing, you know, sort of the Soil Conservation Research Centre at Gunnedah. Before that, I was a farmer, and before that, I worked for CSIRO in Canberra on dingoes for 6 years.
So did I hear you say that you're a staff member at UNE?
Yeah, funny thing that. I'm involved in a soil organic carbon research project, Professor Brian Wilson, and long story short, you know, sort of because I've done a lot of that for about 20-odd years, there's a project which is nationwide, so we're putting benchmarking soil organic carbon, and I became a staff member at UNE at the ripe old age of 72.
Sounds great.
It's been educating and really enjoyable working with, you know, keen, mature-age students who, and just being able to mentor and pass on, you know, sort of the knowledge that I've learned over those years, yeah.
So you're actually also here to, as the first opening night at the Belgrove Cinema, the film called The Koalas, A Move About Survival. It opens at 6:30 Friday, 2nd of August, and runs till 4th of August. So how did you get involved in the koala film?
Basically, because of the work that we've done around here. Dave Carr, he's another environmental consultant, ecologist in Armidale, and quite well known. But he and I undertook a number of projects with Southern New England Landcare, so ranging from audio moth installations to hear the male koalas. They actually, it picks up, it records their sounds. So it's sort of like this. So if you hear that strange sound in the middle of the night, it's generally a koala looking for a bit of company. So yeah, that's basically why my name was put forward, be on the Q&A panel at the end of the documentary.
So that'll be at the end of the film on Friday night. So I'll just read a few things. So we've got two speakers, John, yourself, and David Carr, another local. The film says, on the east coast Australia, where forests meet the urban fringe, koalas face unprecedented challenges. Now, this film is about, through stories of individual koalas, scientists and carers, viewers learn about the unique characteristics of koalas and the key threats they face. There is actually a little byline that says, a national shame, koalas extinction by 2050, which is a bit frightening. So the two filmmakers, Gregory Miller and Georgia Wallace Crabb, they make documentaries and other media of Australian international audiences. Now, Georgia has directed the New Beijing Reinventing a City 2009 about the rapid redevelopment of Beijing before the 2008 Olympics. And she's also an award-winning documentary maker of Jabe Babe, A Heightened Life in 2005. Now, I know Gregory Miller, the other filmmaker. He's made documentaries, including Cultivating Murder, 2018, about land clearing and the murder of an environmental officer, Glenn Turner, on the 29th of July 2014, and he was one of my colleagues. Koalas. What do you know about koalas as our local focus for the show today? What's the koala habit in our local area?
Most people around Armidale have probably recently noticed more koalas. Unfortunately, that was leading into probably the worst drought since colonisation in the Tablelands from, you know, end of 2018, you know, 2019, 2020. So the numbers have dropped off a bit, but the concerning thing is the ones that are here, there is chlamydia, which is present in the population here. chlamydia, when koalas are stressed, whether it's heat stress or, you know, sort of a habitat stress, chlamydia, which is a bit like the human coal sore virus in common coal sores, well, it sort of manifests itself when they get stressed. And, yeah, so we're quite concerned about the ongoing future of koalas in the New England.
So what trees are their food sources here on the tablelands?
Look, they eat a wide range. They like the Blakely's red gum. They really love applebock, that's Eucalyptus brigistiana. They eat stringy barks. They eat quite a few. Some in Gunnedah, they used to literally eat river red gums to death. And up here, they've done the same thing with a couple of different species. We've seen that.
So I suppose if you wanted to plant some food source trees for koalas, you'd go down to the Armidale Tree Group.
That's right.
And they would tell you exactly what to grow.
Well, they actually have koala packs for you know, smaller landholders, and it's a really fantastic community-based not-for-profit organisation, and they've been involved in a lot of revegetation across the tablelands.
So let's go back to Gunnedah and the koala. Tell me about your experience with the koala in Gunnedah.
I was a farmer there up until 1988, and I saw our first koala at Emerald Hill in 1984. The population steadily increased up until the point of about 2008. Every day I'd do a 3-kilometre walk around the research centre, and I would see, you know, in a week anywhere between 8 and 12 koalas. So then we had, in 2009, at the end of a really, really dry spell, well, it was a drought actually, we had two consecutive heat waves in November and December. And because we were working on a research project there, we had collars on about 19 koalas, and we lost 25% that cohort. And then most landholders actually, we figured out that we lost about 25% across the whole Gunnedah Basin. Again, 11 and 12 was very, very dry. Then 2013, the Warrumbungle bushfire wiped out 95% of the Warrumbungles. 2014, we had a record maximum at the Gunnedah Airport of 46.9 degrees centigrade. And then on top of that, we had the 2018-2019-2020 drought. So effectively, we've lost about 95% of the koala population in the Gunnedah Basin.
So you're pointing to the dry spells as impacting greatly on the koala population, but what about habitat loss?
Look, habitat loss has a really significant effect, and connectivity, you know, sort of knocking out, you know, connecting corridors to larger patches of native vegetation has certainly had a huge impact. It's preventable, but, yeah, unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be the will to make a difference.
We have seen the decimation of the floodplain vegetation on the western floodplain. All the corridors for movement have been removed, probably during 2011 to 2022, obviously for production in the agri sector, but we don't basically have those connections for movement of species across to resources. So even when you've got those dry periods, they can't find the resources because they have no corridors to move along. It's basically just broad-scale agricultural paddocks.
No, I totally agree. The flip side of that is there are a huge number of landholders, and I mean, I've been involved with quite a few, who've planted, you know, sort of significant environmental plantings, not only for koalas but for other wildlife. And the biggest thing with me is trying to get the message across that if you're actually going to do that, try and plant in blocks. I mean, when you see 3 and 4 rows of trees across a landscape, okay, it might be a windbreak, but it's not of great use to a lot of the smaller birds. So you're planning for, you know, sort of 20, 30, 40, 50 years, even longer. So, you know, if you're going to plant it properly and try and make sure that you plant in volume, not just skinny little rows of trees.
Yeah, I think things like the edging effect, how a certain size of a block of replanting needs to be. So the edging effect, the mistletoe and all the things don't affect, and also the native miners getting to those long rows of trees. So you've got to plant in big blocks, a turnaround in some ways. Now, let's go back to the film, The Koala, a movie about survival. It poses that the fires that went through that Eastern Fall country decimate, and population's very low now. Would that be right?
Again, it'll depend on individual areas, but on the Eastern, I think the biggest threat, apart from natural disasters like you know, those horrible bushfires is clearing of vegetation and deaths by, you know, sort of vehicle strike. They're the biggies. The other thing, though, and I mean, this is, I sort of alluded to this earlier, chlamydia, once the koalas are stressed in any way, shape or form, chlamydia manifests itself, and basically the females either become infertile or die, and in almost all circumstances, unless they're given antibiotics, males die fast at a greater rate than the females. But it's a combination of things, and it makes me really, really sad, because we can do something about it, but the biggest problem koalas are facing is the increase of the human population, which we demand a lot of our environment.
Yeah, I think a couple of headers there on the movie leaflet from Bob Brown, AO. Action comes out of a brilliant movie like Koalas. And Tim Winton, AO, also noted, you'll be charmed, you'll be dismayed, and then I bet you'll be as angry as hell. So sort of that typifies what film is trying to present, but also what the lot in life the koalas have got at the moment. You've got traffic strikes. I know that the film talks about urban development. So you mentioned, you know, the encroachment of the human species in the natural environment. So you've got these large developments where they're bulldozing all the trees down and putting in roads without due consideration for the species, how it's going to move around that space. Also the logging of the forest areas, yeah, and then put on that the fire, which is a natural part of our Australian forests. However, if you haven't got those areas that are well connected away from those areas, then the koalas can't move to safety. So you've got this a litany of issues against the koala.
Totally agree with everything you've said there. I guess I got a phone call yesterday from a lady who alerted me to the fact that Commonwealth is looking for input on, you know, their latest legislation. This is a Commonwealth government, and it closes on the 5th of August. And I must admit, I didn't even know about it. I should have. But so I'll be sitting down on the weekend putting together some input into that. But I think where we're at the moment, and I'll take a step back, the thing that really concerned me, there was an upper house parliamentary inquiry, which was Kate Faymann was the head of that. Now, that was, I gave evidence to that, as did a lot of my colleagues and other people who do research on koalas, and we gave evidence in December 2019, and the findings for that were delivered in June 2020. And I think from memory, and I should have checked this morning, but from memory, there were 43 recommendations, and the government agreed with three, took about six or seven on board, and basically no action on the others. So that upper house parliamentary inquiry was to look into the future of the koala population and the future habitat. And they basically came out with saying that by 2050, koalas would be functionally extinct in New South Wales. The government at that stage, basically, the response was, well, no, we're going to double the koala population by 2050. Now, I was contacted along with a lot of other people by different reporters, and the minister at that time was asked some pretty pertinent questions, and he said, oh, no, it's an aspiration to double the population by 2050. So that's where we're at. You know, it's koalas, politics, land, people. I think we need to start triaging certain areas, finding out where we have healthy populations, protecting those areas so that there is a future for them, and that won't be out west. It's just getting too hot.
So that point about getting it too hot. Now, in the film, it does talk about the research about climate change. It talks about how the koalas have a selective diet and some of those toxins that are in their food source. Can you mention that a little bit?
Yeah, so other research, I mean, the koala's probably one of the most studied species in the world. There's a bit of koala politics that goes on it because there's so few resources to do that research. But Catalyst did a documentary, a short episode, 6 minutes, in 2011, and a scientist based at ANU who back then, so that's what, 13 years ago, he was doing work even prior to that, and it's still continuing. Long story short, the more CO2 there is in the air, the greater the processing by the native or the photosynthetic process, and then that increases the tannins and toxins and phenols in the leaves. And koalas nearly have to eat a garbage bin full of leaves a day, just to, you know, just that's what they need. But when they're dry, they can't get as much nutrient out of them. They're probably a bit like koalas are the panda of Australia. Pandas eat a lot of bamboo for very little nutritional value. Koalas do pretty much the same.
So as we go into hotter and drier climatic variables, those extended droughts that are predicted in terms of climate change, any of those areas where koalas are reasonably healthy, they may actually not have much longer to survive in those areas.
That pretty much sums it up. Yeah, that's where we're headed in a lot of cases. I mean, when we were doing the research at Gunnedah, I used to go and check when it was really hot and dry, you know, that 2009 period. I'd go out at least once a week to check on the welfare of the animals. And on one, you know, over a two-day period, I checked every one of them. And every single one of those koalas was at the base of the tree, in the shade of the tree, hugging the tree to dissipate the heat that it had in its body. It was just too hot and continues to be too hot. I mean, I did a survey. I walked 150 kilometres in January 2023, just doing a koala survey on the side of the roads along Wanderbar Road. Now, normally I would expect to see somewhere between 15 to 20 koalas. I saw two, you know, so that's 62 kilometres of road, 63 kilometres of road, and both sides of the road. And yeah, so that is very indicative of what's happening out there.
So just go back to Armidale and our local New England. Whereabouts are the koala populations here? Are they sort of dispersed across the tablelands here, or are they in particular areas, eastern, western fall? Where would they be found in the forests?
Well, Dave Carr and one of his offsiders actually caught one in St. Mary's School just up here a few years back. So they're at the golf course, basically all over Yarrowitch, the Invergowrie, even Kelly's Plains. There have been koalas out there. There was one at the lookout when I sort of first came to Armidale. The numbers, though, and the people who play golf will tell you this, they've dropped off. And again, that was that prolonged drought, probably the worst. I mean, I would suggest the worst since colonisation, because on different land properties around Armidale, there were trees that would have been 300-400 years old that were dead, you know, so they died. So the koalas, again, have been impacted up here. And there's something that people may have forgotten about, but at one stage during the bushfires, Armidale was the most polluted city in the world. We had a reading of, I think it was 860 particulates per million or something like that. So it was we couldn't see. We had our family up here, and we couldn't see more than about 50 metres. So when you're breathing that in, and this is something that we're sort of going to be looking at in the not-too-distant future, it could be possible that some seemingly healthy koalas in 2021, 2022 may have died from particulates that they breathed in during that, you know, the times when visibility and the bush pollution was so high.
So I know that the public raised about $1 million in 2020 for the Port Macquarie Koala Rehabilitation Hospital. Is that an effective way to look after the koala by actually having hospital? That's a one hospital. Do we need another hospital in Armidale, or how does it all work with when koalas come into care?
That's a killer question. So about 3 years ago, we had a get-together in Armidale with different people who the carers and researchers. I sort of came up with the concept of, I called it a NARC. It was a Native Animal Rehabilitation and Research Centre to be based in Armidale. And we've been working towards that. Someone else, we've got a koala project officer at Southern New England Land Care, and that's a project that we're hoping to get up and running in the not-too-distant future, because at the moment there's a carer out at Inverell, so she has rescued or intervened with 61 koalas in a bit over 12 months all around. I mean, she's out at 3 o'clock in the morning, and she's an amazing lady. But so, yes, the option there is to either take the koala to Port Macquarie, and most koalas that go to Port Macquarie don't come back. Some do, but the majority don't. It's either to Lismore or to Byron Bay. So it's really important that koalas actually eat the leaves, the browse leaves from their local area. And sure, you can actually substitute that, but it's not as good because their gut flora, you know, microflora is adapted to their local tree species. So Yep, we definitely need a facility in Armidale, and we're working towards it. But, yeah, I mean, the irony, and Gunnedah, I think they're talking about their koala hospital, and it's been $15 million or maybe more. We'll be ready by 2026, but unfortunately, there aren't that many koalas in the Gunnedah area. So it takes a long time for the ship to turn around, but just in the very short period of time that was initiated to the time of completion, the koala population has crashed by most likely around 95%.
So you're talking about in Armidale possibly a native species, not just a koala, so rehabilitation centre, but a native species. Now, I sort of just had a recent experience with a brush-tailed possum, landed on our back step with a baby in its pouch, took it to the vet, rang wires, and then I got a notification that it had been gone to the Northern Rivers for rehabilitation. So I suppose that's a perfect example, yeah. An actual example, that the species are taken away from our local area, and whether they're returned or not, that's the question. Makes perfect sense. But you also mentioned key areas where we can actually have these populations. Now, one of the things is that's been touted by the government was the Koala National Park.
Basically, you can't contain a species in a national park. What is certainly happening to a certain extent in the Pilliga, by reintroducing species, and you may know about Rambo the fox and all of that, that's a story unto itself, but you can do that. It takes a huge amount of time and money, but koalas they're not like bilbies, and they're not like, you know, who can survive in those sort of areas. They can escape the heat. Koalas can't, you know. So finding, I mean, you need to look for microclimates for areas that have survived the bushfires. I mean, those bushfires wiped out rainforests, for goodness sake, you know. Try and find places where they can be looked after, and that certainly will be national parks, but also it will be private properties. And there, I think there needs to be a general will to have a combination in those areas of not, you know, of production, but of considered and manageable production, and whether it's livestock, but certainly not, you know, open cultivation. But to incorporate those two, I think, yeah, that's probably the way to go. It can't just be a government initiative. It has to engage the community. And, you know, Koala headquarters, the people up there, they were knocked about by the fire, but they've done a wonderful job. So there are a lot of dedicated and concerned people out there, and it's harnessing that, probably spending less on administration than and more on-ground works.
So what you've sort of presented is probably a sort of a pseudo-solution would be, firstly, on the tablelands here, we have some sort of native animal rehabilitation centre. So we're not just relying on places like the Port Macquarie Hospital for our koalas. We treat all native species up here on the tablelands and then reintroduce them back into the wild, if they're able to, into the local area. But the other thing is to have a combination of land uses that are conducive to koalas. So you've got the private land use, which could still be in production, also national parks, but acknowledging that they're all prone to fire. And I think you did mention microclimates, so a microclimate that may not be as conducive to the fire, a bushfire racing into it, is where the koala can actually go to, move to escape the worst of the fire, I suppose, is what you're proposing?
Yes, sir. Look, I am. I'd like to see a more collaborative approach to the well-being, not just of koalas. I mean, because they're such, you know, cute and cuddly little critters, and well, they appear to be, I can tell you, they can bite and they can scratch. I've experienced a fair bit of that. But they're incredibly appealing, and they tend to hog the limelight. I mean, they are one of many, you know, native species in the tablelands. And I think that, you know, we should look at them as part of that native animal community. There's many different ways of looking at it, and I just think all options should be sort of considered, and we need to bring people along with what we're hoping to achieve.
We might tie it up there, John. Now, I just want to go back to the tree group. So if any landowners want to go and plant some koala food trees, they can go to the Armidale Tree Group, see the staff there, and get a koala package.
That's right, yeah.
Yep, and that will be a good way to start this whole process if somebody wanted to engage. But the other thing is we've got this koala movie, which is opening on 6:30, Friday the 2nd, and running till the 4th of August at the Belgrave Cinema. bit of a documentary, The Koalas, a movie about survival. It's also going to Lismore, Sortel, Nambucca, Kempsey and Port Macquarie over the weekend, so it's a mass opening. Gregory Miller and Georgia Wallace Crabb are the filmmakers who have got a wealth of films under their belt. Gregory Miller in particular made Cultivated Murder, about the land clearing and the murder of an environmental officer, Glenn Turner, in 29th of July, 2014. Do yourself a favour, head along, if you're interested in the koala and you want to find out more about the koala, go to that film opening Friday, this Friday, the 2nd, at 6:30 at the Belgrave. But if you miss it, go down to the tree group. I'm sure the people down at the tree group will talk to you about koalas and provide you with a koala pack if you've got a patch of land that you'd like to plant out. And if you hear about the Native Species Rehabilitation Centre in Armidale, you'll know where it comes from. And thanks, John, for coming in and the koala for having a chat today.
My pleasure, and sparked the interest of our Armidale community. I'm very lucky to be part of it.
Okay, thank you.
Cast then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.